The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, GMs. Who needs bad guys? We all do. How about more than 30 villains oven ready for your campaign? Kabooter Games presents Villains Next Door. Everyday people who have a gaping, pitiless void where they should have a conscience. Designed by a diverse team of creators, each villain has a history, goals, and 3 story seeds you can use with any system. And each comes with a 5e step lock. Funding on Indiegogo right now. Villains Next Door, common people with uncommon evil. Visit bit.ly/villainsnextdoor and back it today.
Which D&D subclass is the best healer? Find out on tonight's show with special guest Alex Baum.
There will be arguments.
Yes, always. Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
And I am your guest host, Alex Baum.
Yay! Yep. We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next adventure. Before we get into our main topic, some people may not know Alex Baum. I absolutely adore her content. Would you like to give yourself a plug?
Hi, my name is Alex Baum, misspelled, of course, A-E-L-X, because I am incredibly dyslexic and it spreads its way into everything that I do. I am two parts. I am a TikTok creator where I focus mostly on dungeon mastering, game mastering, trying to put a little more pizzazz into your game mastering, giving you a little food for thought, things like that. And then on the side of Twitch, I also have chit chat, sit down, talk about whether a gelatinous cube is vegan or not. We decided it is not vegan because it's closely related to a jellyfish, and a jellyfish is not vegan. Fun fact. And then also every other Friday, we have the amazing Justin on my stream for Initiative and Intrigues, which is my D&D live show, which is also on YouTube if you want. And we're also now getting into Magic the Gathering. In fact, right after this stream, I will be streaming, opening up the new box of Magic the Gathering Kamigawa Neon Tokyo, which is super exciting.
Cyber ninjas, yes!
It's really good, and I've been like dying all day. I actually went and cooked, meal prepped for the week because I couldn't open it, and I just didn't know what to do with myself.
Something to do. That's awesome. Well, we are so happy to have you. Sorry we ran into some technical difficulties, but that is not going to stop us from having a wonderful time here on the show today. As you guys can tell, Brandon is not here, so Alex was very happy to drop in on us and fill in for him, so I appreciate that. Without doubt, one of the most challenging parts about being a dungeon master is coming up with fun and interesting NPCs to flesh out your world with. To truly make them fun and interesting, it takes a lot of work. This is especially difficult for spellcasters. Lucky for us, Magician's Menagerie has got us covered. It is a collection of arcanists with new spells, items, and inspiring stories to fill out your stories and campaign. Oh, and did we mention the artwork, the layout? It looks gorgeous. This product is coming to Kickstarter on February 15, 2022. They are running an awesome early bird special. Make sure you get in because it is jam-packed with fat loot. My dice are trembling with excitement. Are yours? Don't miss out on this one. Head on over to rebrand.ly/magiciansmenagerie and introduce your players to characters they will never forget.
All right.
So today I'm really excited to talk about, we don't generally do rank class stuff. So this is a...
There's a reason for that, though.
Right, because we can't never agree on anything.
Blood may be spilled in those cases.
So, but today we're going to attempt to rank the... Well, we've kind of ranked them already. We're going to talk about some of our top five healing subclasses. Now, all three of us ranked stuff, and I took the average and determined where they fit on this line after narrowing it down to five or six of them. So we are going to work backwards, starting with number five. The hope is that we'll have a little bit of back and forth, and maybe some new player tips will come out of some of the shenanigans of these different mechanics. So for the first one, which is the fifth on our list, we are going to talk about the Celestial Warlock. This is certainly something that is... I didn't expect to end up on this list, but actually looking at the mechanics of the Celestial Warlock and how the fact it doesn't rely on spells, I feel like it really gave it a good place on this.
Well, yes and no, but hey.
You don't think it's a good one?
Yeah, well, I mean, it does, but it still does rely on spells, but we'll get more into that.
Okay. Before we kind of give our thoughts, Alex, what are your thoughts on this? I see that you gave it, a 3?
I was the one that gave it the highest rating. I gave it a 3 and both of you gave it a 4. But I thought that the Celestial Warlock... So whenever I go into these kind of rankings, I kind of do two things. I go not only for ability to heal, but also for like originality of how the mechanics work. Because, you know, of course, Life Domain Cleric is the best healer, but no duh, is it the best healer? Because it just... I've played a Life Domain Cleric and it's very like boring to play in my opinion. And so the reason why I ranked this a 3 is because like you said, they have the, hang on, it's right here. Then at first level, you gain the ability to channel the celestial energy and heal wounds. You have a pool of D6s that you spend to fuel this healing. The number of dice in the pool equals 1 plus your warlock level. As a bonus action, and that was really important to me. That was the thing that was important to me. You can heal one creature you can see within 60 feet of you, spending dice from the pool. The maximum number of dice you can spend is equal to your charisma modifier. Mm-hmm. And then you roll the dice that you spend and then add them together and then restore that number of hit points. That's a bonus action.
Absolutely.
That's better than Bardic Inspiration, in my opinion.
Oh, really? You think so?
Yeah, because Bardic Inspiration, you add it to the D20, so there's not really you could still not win or succeed. Where this is just like boom, you get it. So I like this one a lot more than you guys liked it. But I also do agree that it is a half caster. It's a warlock. It's a half caster.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that I think it actually technically doesn't even fit into half caster because it's
really
so...
yeah,
technically. Warlocks actually are classified as full casters, but that's another topic unto itself.
That I didn't know.
Well, I've always known Warlock as being one of the half casters and one of the people that don't get all of the spell slots that everybody else gets.
Yeah, it definitely affects the metric.
And that definitely was the reason why I put it at a 3 instead of like a 2 or other things outranked it. So I actually agree with you guys a lot that like the limited spell casting, but that pool of healing, man, it's just a little too sexy for me.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. What are your thoughts?
Well, the Celestial Warlock, it's keep in mind, it does have healing spells.
Mm-hmm.
And the benefit is it gets these, because it's a warlock, these spells back after a short rest.
That's a big selling point. Yeah.
But that also means it has all the flaws the warlock has, too.
That's also true.
They only have so many spells at once. And their spell list for healing is nowhere near as exhaustive as the other classes on this list. And the other thing, too, is...
Yes, Felsinia.
Is their ability, the one that allows them to heal, is actually similar, but worse than the ability that the Circle of Dreams Druid has.
Oh, I see what you're saying. And you're right, they don't... I think that... But what I think, the fact that if a game is running, and the assumption is they should be running 5 to 6 encounters a day.
Right.
That, and remember, Warlocks cast at the highest level possible as well, which is a huge bonus. But the fact that they get those spell slots back on a short rest, if you're following the appropriate number of encounters a day, they actually start to come out ahead. And that's the assumption we make in this analysis, right? That the regular adventuring day is going to be 5 to 6, you know, encounters. And at that point, a healer is going to be stretched pretty thin, which is a big problem. The other thing that I think that really made the Celestial Warlock stand out is the fact that Alex just pointed out, the fact that it's a bonus action, making it far superior to healing. What's the bonus action healing spell? Healing word. That one. And that already is super powerful, because that means not only can the warlock boof pop somebody up as a bonus action, they can still blow away another minion, which kind of brings us into the big question here. What determines if something's a good healer? Is it just the raw damage output or healing output, or is it the versatility that comes with it? Because the Celestial Warlock does get access to cure wounds, right?
Yep.
And
I was going on the raw healing output for my rankings, so.
Right, and that's okay. I'd like to see hear what Alex has on that point, but we got to remember, it gets access to a curing spell, and its pool of healing is not a spell, so it can do the bonus action and a cure wounds in the same turn.
Yep.
And I think that pulls it ahead of the Circle of Dreams Druid.
Yep. But the Circle of Dreams Druid also can do the same thing.
I did not know that. That's not true.
Yes.
Yeah, they have, because they've got a mechanic too.
That does the same thing, only farther range.
Yeah, 60 feet.
But it's not for as many points.
What's
that? The points. It's not the same dice roll. I think this Circle of Dreams Druid is a D4, not a D6.
Yes, it's weaker.
I'd be able to tell you that.
Hey, welcome to my world.
Okay. Yeah, but you had your laptop on dual monitor. I don't.
Oh yeah, so you're stuck with that. There's a lot that goes on there, but that for our fifth one, I think the Celestial Warlock really falls in good. Is there any particular invocations that you think really fit the packs? For me, it's the Pact of the Chain and getting the familiar, because you can deliver your cure wounds through the familiar.
Yep.
Right, which gives you a mobile healing station, because the warlock doesn't have to be there to heal, I don't think, because the minion can, the fine familiar can do it. What are your thoughts on that, Alex?
I just really love the idea of, like, you know, the town is getting attacked by, like, gnolls or something, and there's this civilian who's, like, on the ground, and he's like, oh god, oh, and he's like the world is on fire around him, and then just running up to him, there's this imp, and the imp's like, please don't run, please don't run, please don't run. And he's like, oh god, oh god, and he's like, I'm gonna heal you, I promise, just don't run, come on, I gotta get
I love that. So great. That's hilarious, and I think that would make some fun. I tried to heal him. He died. Why? He was running away from me. I love that. That is so great. Was there any invocations or anything that you guys thought that really fit the theme at all?
I was looking up something else just now. So,
For the invocation or something else in general?
Something else in general.
Okay. So the warlock is definitely something I wasn't, there's a couple on here I wasn't expecting to make this list, but that does make our fifth spot based on our average rankings.
Oh, and the Circle of Dreams Druid also uses D6s.
Oh, okay. Mm. Well, there you go. Does it have an imp?
No.
Does it get its slots back on a short rest?
No, but it has way more slots.
Fair enough.
And spells that most other classes don't even have access to, which were so awesome that what's gonna nerf it?
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about the...
I might be sore of being put on our rankings.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm upset where this fell in, because for this class, I put it at number one. I think, hands down, the Lore Bard is the single best healing class in the game. And
I know why you put it at number one, but doesn't mean I agree with the logic behind it.
That's fine. I will say mine, you can disagree, and then I will tell you why you're wrong. So, everyone knows that the Bard is a full spellcaster, has access to a lot of things. The Lore Bard specifically can pull spells and mechanics from other classes.
Up to 2 spells, I believe, correct?
Well, 4, actually, because you get it at the Magical Secrets, you get twice as a Lore Bard.
Okay.
Once at 6th, I think, and the other at 10th. But anyways, so the first thing I want to touch on, and this makes the most sense, is Bardic Inspiration. Bardic Inspiration is not a direct heal. And this is where it comes back when I'm talking about what satisfies the role of healer, right? And for me, avoidance is just as potent and just as effective as any healing spell. And I would argue that it's more so. So with Bardic Inspiration successfully giving players an option to a bonus to save against a dangerous spell, best kind of healing. But most importantly, I think that Vicious Mockery is one of the best healing spells, because a single missed hit from a powerful enemy is far more advantageous than a healing spell to try to recoup those lost hit points.
But once again, though, I was going off of straight up healing, not damage prevention.
And that's okay.
And I can have a rebuttal against the cutting words.
Go ahead, and then we'll let Alex take over.
The spell Bane.
What about it?
It does the same thing, but to more guys.
Minus D4 and is easily resisted too, but yes. But they also get that.
So, if they want it.
Right. All right, Alex, what do you think?
So the reason why I put the Lord Bard at a 5, I'm sorry, is because it's just too, okay, you're going to get into
this. She's like, Justin, you're wrong, asshole. Now I'm going to tell you why.
You're wrong. No. I don't really like the Lord Bard. I like it, but I don't really like it because it is just so spread thin, in my opinion, that whenever you get into the higher levels, whenever everybody else is just doing this insane stuff, you just become a Swiss Army knife. And like, it's cool to be a Swiss Army knife. It's great to be a Swiss Army knife. But whenever you come into healing, whenever you do healing, mm-hmm. that is more thinking, in my mind, thinking towards mechanics and stuff like that. And whenever mm-hmm. you're a Swiss Army knife of persuasion and deception and perception, you know, all that kind of stuff, that takes, because, you know, D&D is all about like, all right, I'm going to give a little here and take a little here and all that kind of stuff. And you only have a certain amount of power that you're able to get to before level 20. And so I feel like it spreads so thin that a lore bard would just not be an adequate healer for, you know, a paladin, a barbarian, you know, like if you got no other half healers, if you have no other healing in your party, it would be like if you had a lore bard and a paladin, that'd be chill. Like, that'd be great. But like, whenever it's just the lore bard, like that's kind of how I pictured it, was the sole healer. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's just too thin whenever you get higher up.
Yeah. Well,
I can see Justin getting spicy.
Yeah. Well,
I can see him getting spicy.
Yeah. Well, in a similar vein, I put down that the lore bard for more or less is the jack of all trades, master of none. And I do believe it is a competent healer. I just don't believe his healing, however, is particularly exceptional.
Well, but I would agree if you're going for like raw, like numbers.
Right. And I have ran a game in the party, the only healer was a lore bard. And quite frankly, they did their job. So.
And that's good. So the other thing I want to talk about is they have features built into their mechanics that do that. Song of Rest, for instance. So hit dice are precious and only recover half during a long rest. And so giving a little extra boost to everyone during a short rest when they're recovering hit points is pretty potent as far as recovery. Sure, it's not recovery in combat, but going into the next battle, that is a powerful resource, and they do get access to like cure wounds and stuff like that. But because of their magical, the College of Lore magic, the magical secrets, which they get two of, they can certainly fill and pick up any healing spells from any class that they want. So that kind of offsets the fact that they don't already have access to those. But
they can only pull so many, of course.
Right. You're still limited, but if you're going to pick four, you're going to pick the ones that are potent, right? The other thing I wanted to touch on is, you know, I kind of touched on Bardic Inspiration, but when you become a lore bard, you also get cutting words, which once again is a mechanic that when a creature that you can see within 60 feet makes an attack mm-hmm. roll, ability check, or damage roll, you can use your reaction to expend a bardic dice and reduce the effect or the number by that amount. Once again, that could turn a very powerful ogre's hammer to your face to a miss and completely negate, you know, a potential of, you know, 30, 40, 50 damage, depending on the level, right? And that to me, once again, as a healing power, avoidance can be far more valuable, because what level spell do you have to cast to restore, you know, just 50 hit points?
a big one.
And that's just, I mean, let's start at level one. We got a kobold, right? Kobold does 1d6 plus 2, I think, right? So at max, it can do 8. How much can a first level spell do at that? Cure wounds, 1d8 plus the spellcasting modifier, right? So let's assume spellcasting modifier of 3. So the most they're going to do is 12. That's great. Now you're out of first level spell slot, but I can cast Vicious Mockery over and over and over. Anyway, so that's why I think it deserved to be higher up, but we're putting it at the 4. Garwin does say a lore bard as a healer, I could see being very tempted to do something other than healing. It could help out the situation. I agree very much. Is there any other comments on the lore bard before we move to number 3?
Yep, that's good.
I hate that I can't move my mouse up to scroll up. I actually have my show notes open now, so you don't have to keep that open for my... You can use that whole side for you if that makes you better.
Oh, I still need it, so...
Oh, well, anyways. So, do you want... Alex, do you want to tell us about our number 3 rank choice here?
Yeah, so number 3, we put Way of Mercy Monk, which actually, surprisingly, all of us kind of put them in the same area. They, 2 threes and a 2, so yeah, we all kind of agreed that, like, upper middle... Way of Mercy Monk is really, really interesting because it's a beautiful, first of all, the story behind Mercy Monks is just very beautiful. If you haven't had a chance to learn about Mercy Monks, I highly recommend it. I'm not a big fan of monks, but like this one's amazing. The only thing is that there is a good 50-50 split, in my opinion, whenever it comes to the healing aspect and the damage aspect. And the reason why I decided to put them at 3 is because, or no, I put them at 2. The reason why I put a Mercy Monk at 2 is because while I love how much versatility there is, it's a lot of like either or. You can spend your key on hurting or your key on healing. It's like there's not really like, there's not, and that could be a very, very fun thing to play, a fun little game to play with yourself. Like, oh God, do I need to save this for healing? But at the same time, there's just some that are a little bit better.
Right.
But it's worth noting, though, that they are, for the most part, a okay healer until they hit level 11.
And that's the big pull that pulls this in, because honestly, I originally had one of the druids on here, and I changed it because everything I read and the numbers I was looking at convinced me otherwise. But originally, I had it as just an honorable mention, and I had the druid on here instead.
And honestly, I think it should have stayed in honorable mention because all the hinges come online until 11. And let's be real here, most games don't make it that high.
Do you guys want me to read the level 11 feature?
Sure, go ahead.
Absolutely. So level 11, you get Fury of Healing and Harm, which is, this is what was I talking about, the choice. Mm-hmm. Starting at level 11, you can now... I don't know what that is. out a flurry of comfort and hurt. When you use your flurry of blows, you can now replace each of the unarmed strikes with a use of one of your hands of healing with one of your hands of healing without spending a key point for the healing. In addition, whenever you make an unarmed strike with flurry of blows, so the same conditions, you could instead use the Hand of Harm, which is something that you get previously, to strike out without spending a key point for your Hand of Harm. So essentially, it makes Hand of Harm and Hands of Healing free. And the real easy thing is Hands of Healing, they get hit points equal to a roll of your martial arts die plus your wisdom modifier.
Yep.
And that can be quite a bit.
Especially out of combat.
Well, and beyond that, remember, Hands of Healing says you can replace one of your Flurry of Blow attacks, which means you can do it multiple times. And I really think that's what makes this one of the top healers, because I'm imagining a chiropractor running and just like bam, bam, crack, crack, and getting you into position. But since you can replace some of your Flurry of Blows, rolling your martial arts die and adding your wisdom modifier instantly makes it very potent. Not only does the minimum healing out heal the features such as cure wounds or healing word, but because you're a monk, just like the warlock, you get your key points back on a short rest. So there's no reason not to constantly do it. And I think that is really interesting. And the fact that you can run bitch slap an enemy and then run and flurry of blows your ally is pretty interesting too, I think.
And I believe Fire Bows is 3 hits, right?
Well, it's your action to hit, and then you get two extra hits, right? I think. So three total, but only two would be healing.
So you get two that you can do healing hands, but if you're level 11, you probably have a 20 in wisdom anyways. And maybe. So right. That is 10 hit points right there.
Dalcinia says, my sister played it as a pressure point healing, where a bunch of really fast jabs released the body's chi and allowed it to rapidly heal like a healing spell. That is awesome.
And it is worth noting that, if I recall correctly, the Way of Mercy monk at higher levels, once again, can revive dead characters.
Oh yeah, just kick them away. Hey, stop sleeping, asshole! That's what I envision anyway. Kicking somebody awake. Alright, so this is, once again, this is very different, and our Way of Mercy monk doesn't have a lot of tools outside of that, but that is a very potent direct heal mechanic to have. Once again, the martial arts die scales with the player. It recharges on short rest, actually half 30 minutes, actually, technically. So there is some benefits there if you can squeeze those in. And more importantly, you can do multiple hits, which is really nice, because you can offset with a flurry of blows, which is really, really great. But you are stuck choosing. I can either, you know, attack with my flurry of blows or heal. And that's kind of the thing you got to figure out with the monk. And also, it doesn't look like there's any ranged, but I mean, as long as you're running really fast everywhere, I guess that's less of an issue.
And they at least get their key points back on a short rest. How much mileage you get out of that, of course, depending on what level you are, but that's, I think the drawback to this subclass is many, if it's healing output, is very level dependent.
Yes. And I think, but that's true for every class, because you run out of spell slots
to
too,
a
right?
point, but.
Right.
We're running out of time.
All right, so why don't we delve into number two, the Divine Soul Sorcerer.
Which was Brandon's number one pick, actually.
Yes, and Brandon wanted to make sure that got a shout-out, so kudos to you for making sure you give that shout-out to him.
Yep.
So the Divine Soul Sorcerer, this, for obvious reasons, puts it in the top tier meta magic. So regardless of what spell you pick, being able to twin your spell is a huge advantage when it becomes a healer.
Yep.
You have anything else you want to add to that?
They also have full access to the cleric's entire spell list.
Yes. You're a cleric? Well, I'm a better one.
Except for the part where they're still sorcerers and they only know a small amount of spells, and adding an entire spell list on top of all that does not make that any easier for them. Quite the opposite, actually.
So gaining access to some of the those spells, like I think you get Cure Wounds as soon as you select it, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so if you're good, you get Cure Wounds. If you're evil, you get Inflict Wounds. If you're lawful, you get Bless. If you're chaotic, you get Bane. And Neutrality gets Protection from Good and Evil.
Right.
Ooh, Twin Spell Revive.
There you go. Oh, you knocked them both out. Boom, get back up, bitches. You ain't got no time to sleep. One of the cool, and there's more than that, right? So that's the most obvious use of the meta magic, but there's other ones too, like Empowered spell, which allows you to reroll low rolls, which is super great for increasing the chance of doing better healing. Or is that heightened spell? Heightened spell.
No, it's Empowered healing.
Are you talking about the feature?
No. So, Empowered spell is when you roll a damage one. Heightened spell is when you cast a spell that forces you to make. Yeah, no, I think it's an ability on here. It's not.
What you're talking about is the Divine Soul feature, Empowered Healing, starting at sixth level.
Right.
The divine energy coursing through you can empower healing spells whenever you or an ally within 5 feet of you roll dice to determine the number of hit points that a spell restores. You can use one sorcery point to reroll any number of those dice.
Yeah.
Wow. Any number of those.
Any
dice.
Number. Yes.
Wow.
Nope. I'm done.
So
that right there is really cool. But the other thing I wanted to, this is where I meant to go to, with the meta magic, when you do extended or distance spell, if you cast a spell with touch, Cure Wounds, its range becomes 30 feet, which is not quite as good as having a familiar running around and healing people. But, oh, by the way, if you ever play Lunar Silverstar Story, I totally want to play a Celestial Warlock that has the little gnoll that runs up. hey, get up! Anyways.
There's two things on here I'm surprised you have not mentioned.
I'm okay, what are they? Let's talk about them.
Favorite of the gods.
Yes, that was the next point we got to make, because that's super powerful.
Because knowing your argument for the bard.
Yes, it is very good because it is a voyant. So for people that don't know, the favored by the gods at first level when you pick the divine, if you fail a saving throw or miss an attack roll, you can roll 2d4 and add it to the total for possible change. Once you use this feature, it does come back on a short rest, which is super nice. But the problem with this is it only applies to you. But if you're dead, you can't heal people. So I'm going to count that as a win.
Yep. And also worth mentioning, too, is their 18th level ability, Unearthly Recovery.
Is awesome.
Oh, I'm down to less than half my hit points. I gain half of them back.
I mean, if you just barely tip, you can pretty much almost go to full, which is great.
Yeah.
Was there any other points you wanted to touch on here, Alex?
Oh, just that this is a beautiful subclass, and I absolutely love it and want to play it really bad. That's all.
Yeah, it's great. The other thing that I really think makes this really good is they have the Meta Magic Extend, which doubles the duration of a spell. So if you cast, like, Bless, you can double the duration, which is super useful in more than one, especially if you end up getting into two back-to-back encounters.
Or regeneration.
Look at that. I love it. So this the meta magic is really what makes this good. I mean, think about being able to quicken and extend your cure wounds. You can now use cure wounds at a distance as a bonus action, which is awesome.
All right. And now let's go for another one pick.
Yeah, go ahead.
I
don't think the Life Domain Cleric is the best healer. I still think it's the Lore Bard, but man.
The Life Domain Cleric. I'm going to go as it is now. Its only con is it eventually runs out of spell slots.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, God. All right, Alex, why don't you tell us what you think about this being the number one pick?
I mean, just supreme healing at 17th level when you would normally roll one or more dice to restore a hit point with a spell, and instead use the highest possible possibility for each die. For example, instead of restoring 2d6 hit points, you just automatically restore 12. I think that just speaks for itself.
And not to mention, your channel divinity can also heal any creatures of your choice within 30 feet up to 5 times your cleric level.
Justin is a little salty that he is wrong.
Look. Okay, so like you have to understand, the Life Domain Cleric, if I'm not mistaken, I remember Life Domain Cleric in 3.5, and it was just as broken as this one. Like, it was just like as like heals as this one. And so like,
you get a heal.
So it totally makes sense to me that this is obviously going to be the number one healer of all time. But the thing is, like, honestly, have you ever had someone play a Life Domain Cleric at a 5e game? Because I haven't.
I have one.
The closest I played with light, but that's because I wanted Fireball.
Yes. So the actual, in my opinion, based on the player that I had in this, the Channel Divinity is actually one of the most potent ways to play the cleric for healing, because it doesn't consume spell slots and it recharges on a short rest. Mm-hmm. And it's a pretty damn good healing spell. So
you can restore a number of hit points equal to 5 times your cleric level?
Yeah.
Yep.
and so that may not seem like a big deal, but the fact that it regenerates on a short rest gives it a heads up above the rest.
Right. And it's also worth mentioning that their first level ability, yep, the Cycle of Life, as I already mentioned.
Yes.
It just adds to plus the spell's level to the amount healed, and that will scale very fast.
Yeah. And what's really cool is some powers, there's another ability that once you start casting those spells and healing other people, it heals you as well, which is really nice. Uh-huh. So there's a lot going into this that just makes it easier to keep the cleric alive and to keep other people alive. And obviously, from a straight numbers perspective, it absolutely outheals everyone.
Not to mention the fact that they actually have access to heavy armor.
Yep. Heavy armor or medium armor?
Heavy.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
They're tanks. They're a very tanky healer.
So I'm envisioning this, them running in, fighting, beating the crap out of kobolds, looking, he needs heals. You're going to have to wait. I'll come whip your ass in a minute and then run off and heal somebody.
That'd be amazing.
And finish the job.
but somebody, when it comes to just raw numbers, mm-hmm, you can't beat these guys.
Yeah. But that's also one of the reasons, once again, I think that while the raw numbers are very powerful, I think avoiding a single big attack potentially every turn is better. That's just my opinion.
These guys can do it too.
And I'm not saying, and that there is points to that. Like, Bane is similar, right? But it's not a cantrip, man. It's not a vicious mockery. So
that's not kind of the other debuffs clerics can do too.
Yeah, but that's part of it. So if they do those other debuffs, they are pulling away from their healing pool. So which is going to be any healer, I think. So overall, what are as a healer, what did we miss anything in this top five list?
Yes.
Okay, what did we miss?
The Circle of Dreams Druid.
It's in honorable mentions.
It should be higher.
Okay, so I'm salty about the lore bard. He's salty about the druid. We can't all win.
I'm just happy with my Divine Soul Sorcerer.
Yeah,
it's sitting out, I'm like, yay!
It put out towards the top, that's for sure. So, once again, these are just our opinions. They're not set in stone. I didn't run statistical analysis. I just picked what I think... what was some of the tops, and then we kind of just gave them ratings and went with it. But this is kind of, I'm confident in this list, and I hope that all of you listening will walk away with a new view of the lore bard as the number one healer. I mean, the third, what level was it? Fourth? Damn it. How did it get down to four?
I also want to mention that for people who are listening to the podcast and aren't able to see the notes, Justin tried to put the lore bard higher by putting a 0.6 instead of a 1, because we ranked them 1 to 5, and he put a 0.6 to make the lore bard high, not the fifth. You put it because if you had you put that 1, that would be the lowest one, right?
All the rest of them are full numbers, but I gave that a decimal so it would be bigger. I'm so petty. Wow, I'm going to need a glass of water. It's salty in here. All right.
And I do want to give the shout out to the Circle of Dreams Druid, because they do get bald of the Summer Court, which is basically a healing word on crack, mm-hmm. similar to what the Warlock does, but better.
Yeah, your druid doesn't have a pet, though, to deliver him.
But they can teleport their allies.
Okay.
I
can see a benefit to that. That's a good avoidance ability.
Oh, crap. This is my patrol. Steve, come here. What the?
Now, I do want to say this was on the list prior. I made an audible call and switched it with the Way of Mercy Monk.
While I was asleep.
Well, you know what? You shouldn't be sleeping. Sleep is for the weak. All right. So that'll do it for our main topic today. The top five best healing subclasses. According to Crit Academy-ish and Alex Bomb. We have an announcement to make.
We gotta make this happen.
I'm super, super excited.
Please.
Our friends over at One Shot Onslaught, and specifically the Majestic Goose Network, have launched a Kickstarter for GooseCon. GooseCon... GooseCon 2022 will be the first of new, hopefully annual, tabletop gaming convention.
I'm purple. I haven't been to a con in a really long time. I'm jonesing really fucking hard. September 23rd to 25th at the Duke Energy Convention Center in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Going to the Duke. There will be live podcast shows, panels, a massive open game library, vendors' alleys, and oh, so much more.
There's nothing better than an annual tabletop. I can't fucking do it.
The Majestic Goose is a tabletop RPG podcast network with over dozens of shows. We've been on Lore and Poor. I've been on One Shot Onslaught.
Oh my god, that was so much fun.
We want this to happen because we plan to all go together as well. We'll be doing hopefully a show from there, running some games from anybody that's interested, and just hanging out. So please consider checking out backing GooseCon at rebrand.ly/GooseCon. Check it out. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And now, what you've all been waiting for, our Unearth Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
Our character concept today is AK-911. It was a Warforged. AK-911 is a tall barrel-chested ironwood creation coated with shiny bronze plates. Attached to each arm are integrated hand crossbows, perfect for turning his fist into a peppered steak. Their hollow eye sockets glow with sinister red light that can send chills down even an orc's juice spine.
Alex, do you want to pick that up in the purple text?
All right. So his personality, like many mercenaries for hire, they are kill to serve. Not being one loyal to anyone, but, you know, a good coin. AK is a person of few words. They let one-liner insults do the talking after their crossbow. You're already dead. Just lie down. Though, AK does tend to enjoy hot mud baths when not bathing in the blood of his enemies.
AK-911 is a Warforged construct created during the last era of a military authoritarian kingdom. AK-911 was part of a commissioned set of Warforged to be delivered to a private buyer. Unfortunately, the ship that carried him and his kin was destroyed by a powerful storm. Loosing these deadly construct assassins into the world without anyone to control them.
AK is a simple construct being created for war. That is really all they know, actually. Thus, they push through to complete its purpose. AK isn't without realizing the cost of battle and value of a good dead target. Coin is all it takes to earn AK's loyalty. I'm not picking coin slots on this guy.
Oh god, yes!
So long as they get coins for their mud baths. They'll do as instructed, but be wary. As soon as a better offer comes along, even if you're an ally, AK will put an arrow in your back.
Alex, what do you think about AK-911?
So,
911. I shouldn't say 911 because, yeah.
I mean,
it meant to be emergency, 911. Sorry.
I really like AK-911. I think that he could be a lot of fun. The way that I would use this guy is I would use him as like an ally, but he, like, you know, whenever you go to bed at night, you're like, is he going to kill me in my sleep? You know, that kind of a thing. Like, and like maybe at the very end, you know, he gets paid out and he's like, well, it wasn't horrible doing business with you. Like, stuff like that. That's what I picture him as. Is like a king is like, oh, I've brought one of my best to come along with you. And it's just this dude who's like smoking a cigar and he's just like, I don't care about you.
I have to ask, how much does this character based off of HK-47?
Actually, I already did that, but it was based off of wanting to do another Warforge like HK-47, because we did that as a monster.
That's fair.
But not a character concept, so I did, yes. Killer Droid, I like Star Wars, sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that, but certainly inspired by it. I love what Alex said about using it as an ally to the players, and I love the idea that they have to keep, like, he'll come and say, I got a better offer and point the crossbow, and then they start loading coins into his coin slot to get him to not kill him.
I love it.
Dulcinea says, in a different game, there was a robot named UR86, which was basically military shorthand for UR Deep Six, a.k.a. UR Deep Dead and Buried. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, I think that'll do it for our character concept, the AK-911. Our monster variant today is Animus. Ooh, that sounds nasty.
Yeah.
So to build this bad boy, we're going to start with the origin, the Invisible Stalker. We're going to lose the Invisibility, Faultless Tracker, and Slam, and we're going to give it some new features. First, damage resistances, acid, fire, lightning, thunder, bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing from non-magical attacks.
They also get some damage immunities against cold, necrotic, and poison. And they're also immune to being charmed, exhausted, frightened, grappled, paralyzed, petrified, poisoned, prone, and restrained.
Ouch.
But not all hope is lost because they are vulnerable to radiant. But they also get a special little doohickey in corporeal movement. They can move through other creatures and objects as if they were difficult terrain. It takes 5, 1d10, force damage if it ends its turn inside an object, so they can, like, squeeze.
Right.
And they also so have sunlight sensitivity. When they're in sunlight, they have disadvantage on attack rolls, as well as on wisdom perception checks that rely on sight.
So, we're also going to give it a new weapon, since we took away the slam ability. We're going to call it the Soul Slayer. This is a melee weapon attack that deals 1d8 plus 3 slashing damage, and 13 or 3d8 necrotic damage. The target must succeed a DC 15 con saving throw or have its hit points reduced, maximum reduced, equal to the damage taken. As always, if your hit points hit zero from this ability, you're dead. So we better take a long rest. I also want to talk about its other big ability called Hands of the Wicked. Animus releases a burst of magical energy from its wicked hands in a 15-foot cone, and it has a variety of options.
Six, actually.
Would you like to tell us, Ian, because I just realized I rolled into yours.
Well, number one, you get Confusion Burst. The target must succeed on a DC Wisdom saving throw, or it can't take reactions until the end of its next turn. On its turn, the target can't move, and it uses its action to make melee or range against a randomly determined creature within range. But the target, he can't attack, it does nothing.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Then there is also the option of Paralyzing Burst.
Number two.
The target must succeed on a DC 15 Constitution saving throw or be paralyzed for 1 minute. The target can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending the effect on a successful save. So it must succeed or 1 minute. So 1 minute or a successful save.
Yep.
Ouch.
We're also going to give it Fear Burst. The target must succeed on a DC 15 Wisdom saving throw or be frightened for 1 minute. And of course, it can repeat the saving throws at the end of each of its turns, but with disadvantage if Animus is visible to the target, ending the effect on itself on a success.
And it also gets Scorching Burst, DC 15 saving throw, and 3d10 fire damage if it fails.
Got to have the generic damage attack, right?
Yep. Flamethrower.
And then a frost burst, just a couple more. The target must succeed on a DC 15 Constitution saving throw. On a failed save, the target takes 2d8 cold damage and has disadvantage on the next weapon attack roll it takes before the end of its next turn. On a successful save, the target takes half as much damage and doesn't have disadvantage on their next attack.
Ouch. And last, but certainly not least, Sleep Burst. The target must succeed a DC 14 Wisdom saving throw or fall asleep and remain unconscious for 1 minute. The target awakens if it takes damage or another creature awakens it. The burst has no effect on constructs and undeads. I do apologize, but this is a powerful monster, so it had to have some fun abilities, albeit a lot of them. Alex, what do you think about this deadly destroyer?
Confusion Burst. I might steal this.
Please do.
Somebody is going to die.
Yep.
I have a party of level 13, I think they are right now. I think we're at level 13 right now, and mm-hmm. I'm running out of, like, all the monsters that I'm fighting right now are either way too powerful, and I'm only going to put one against them, and then they're just going to overpower it, or I have mm-hmm. to put, like, 20. So, like, this is like, a beautiful, happy medium, in my opinion, yeah. of, like, I can put three of these out there, absolutely. And they're going to be, like, oh, this is going to be fine. And then, like, the Wicked Hands are going to start, and they're going to be like, this is not fine.
Especially because the versatility of the Wicked Hands and the Animus is intelligent. I will have the stat block on our Patreon, as always, with the lore and the history and all that jazz. Beautiful artwork of this six-handed bastard. So make sure you consider checking that out. I will send that to you when I get a chance, if you're that interested in it. So all right, that'll do it for our monster variant, the Animus.
Now for our encounter, Spare a Coin. While traveling, the characters encounter a lowly beggar, dirty, scruffy, and smells of a latrine. Norman Fortworth approaches any and all adventurers pleading for aid. He admits that he has a gambling problem and has gotten himself into a debt with some unsavory thieves guild known as the Slick Picks.
And naturally, they have threatened not his life, but that of his family. A beggar of the family. Ugh. Somebody is really down on their luck. He seeks aid from adventurers. He only needs a little bit more gold, the exact amount is up to the GM, and he can pay them off. Once he does that, he can happily return home. Now, a character who succeeds in the DC 21 Wisdom check notices a slight, near unnoticeable, slight tremble in his voice. A common nervous indicator of uncomfort, normally associated with dishonesty.
Yeah, normally. The truth is that Norman is an assassin for hire. He accepted a large job to kidnap a powerful noble mage. he accepted the job without making sure he had the resources to pull off the job. So now he is collecting the last bit of coin that he needs for the Oil of Taggart, a potent poison that will knock out a person for an entire day while he makes the transaction. If a character who succeeds a DC 22 dexterity sleight of hand check can pilfer... A character who succeeds a DC 22 sleight of hand check can pilfer a small rolled document from him.
And if you happen to pilfer that document, you need to find someone who can read Thieves' Cant. And they'll be able to read the information contained. Inside, it is a private information on Norman, including his real name, Randall Rondon. A character who succeeds a DC 15 intelligence history check recalls spotting a wanted poster for offering a hefty reward, I think, if he can be turned in alive to the magistrate. No reward if dead.
I guess we're bringing this guy warm.
Alex, what do you think?
I think he's so fun. I love the idea of, I've never really had the idea of, like, having, like, a beggar not be obvious that they're part of some, like, to me, it's right. Like very obvious. Oh, beggars are part of the Thieves Guild, beggars are part of this. And so just for him to be able to be so good at, like, no, I swear. I also see this as one of those things that you do at, like, level 3 and then at level 6. They're like, we need you to find this guy because he killed a mage. And you're just like, is that that guy?
You know this man.
Like, give him a really defined, like, chin, or, like, maybe he has two different colored eyes, you know, something really defined, something so that it's just like, oh, it.
Like a red coat. I love where you went with that. I was trying to do something different. I wanted something that focused more on skills, but also something that didn't necessarily require the players to do anything other than maybe give him a few gold. And the idea of them giving him the gold, then accepting a quest to go rescue a kidnapped or murdered noble mage, and then realizing they're the reason that it happened is just one of those sweet, sweet twists. Mm-hmm. So, do you have anything to add, Ian?
Well, not in particular.
Alrighty then. That'll do it for our encounter of the podcast, Sparacoin. Try to get the right inflection there.
Now, our mention of the podcast is the Frost Lotus, which is a icy white and blue six-petal flower that grows in frozen tundras. On rare occasion, they can be found on top of a frozen mountain peak.
Yes, and it is an uncommon item, just so everyone knows, and it is also a wondrous item. Of course, wondrous lotus. Or, he said wondrous.
Sorry.
It is a wondrous item, and it is also uncommon. When you cast a spell of first level or higher that deals cold damage, you can add the Frost Lotus as a material component to the spell. If you do, a target that takes cold damage from the spell must succeed on the DC 13 Constitution saving throw or have its movement speed reduced by half. Ooh, movement stuff. I love movement stuff. The target can repeat the saving throw at the end of each of its turns, ending on a successful save. The Frost Lotus is consumed by the spell. Ooh, yes.
I would love to hear what you think about this, Alex.
My immediate thought is like, a boss fight where the boss is vulnerable to frost and mm-hmm. they're like, this is the key to defeating this. Like, I don't know any monsters that are vulnerable to frost off the top of my head, but like, this is the key to defeating him. And like, the other thing that this also makes me think of is like a flesh golem is actually like a pretty high DC. I mean, mm-hmm. like for low level characters. And right. so like another idea that I had with this guy is like, if you do this to the flesh golem doesn't have like body temperature to warm itself up, so it'll freeze.
Right. I like that. I like that a lot. That's so good. What are you thinking?
It's a good item. Handy, so, and it boosts a cold damage, which is nice because there's not that many cold spells to begin with,
right? So what are your guys' overall thoughts of a material component item like this that is meant to be consumed as part of the component casting of a spell?
I'm for it. I've always said that.
I really enjoy it, and I think that one of the things that is so fun is to just watch a player get freaked out about resources and be like, do I do it? Do I not? Do I do it? Mm-hmm. Do I not? And so like that, this kind of tickles my funny bone where it's like, I get to like give this to them. And it's like, see, another thing that I imagine with this is like, you get it from like the cleric, and the cleric is like, you'll know when to use it. And then you're like, when do I use it, old man? And he's like, you'll know. Like, when do I use it?
You'll like, know when the time is right. I think that's really cool. Delcinia says, I love the idea of consumable items that can enhance or change spells. Well, you're in luck, because I'll be making these regularly for our patrons, because I intend to hopefully make a bunch of them and have an entire list of spell reagents that enhance various spells in different ways. So I'm playing with it, so you'll see them in our magic items until I get a good solid strategy, which I think this is a good start. So I think this is probably like the third or fourth one I've done in the last probably 6 months. So I think we did the Scorching Fire Scorching Flower, which I totally didn't steal from the Mario Fire Flower thing at all. Nope, not at all. Doesn't even look like it, really. I don't know. Saying, but anyways, that'll do it for our magic item, Frost Lotus. Our dungeon master tip of the podcast, actually, Brandon showed us this at the end after the show last week.
Yeah, I've seen those. They're quite nice.
They're very cool. They're dungeon morph cards from Inkwell Ideas. So, have you ever had the need to build a dungeon on the fly? Unexpected choices and actions of characters can often leave us kind of unprepared. In passing, you drop a small tidbit of lore about complex taverns said to be hidden deep under the Swamp of Sorrows.
Yeah. To your surprise, or not to your surprise, if you've been DMing for any amount of time, the characters latch onto these kind of things. Right. Now they want to seek it out and delve deeper into the cavern, so what do you know? Yeah, I'm prepared for that. You don't have it. You don't have a map. Maybe you just struggle to create a fun and complex dungeon, whatever, but the dungeon morph cards can actually solve this and more issues.
Absolutely.
And they're small, 2.5x2.5 cards with a square, which have a collection of dungeon rooms and quarters on them. And as your characters delve into the dungeon, you can build the dungeon as they move along. And the mixing and matching of designs is a quick and easy way to never be unprepared for a dungeon delve again.
Yeah, so when he showed me to these things, if you're on your computer or something, quickly Google this. And they're very cool, and you can shuffle them and just chuck them out as they're adventuring and build it out. And they're really nice. They all fit together in a variety of different ways. And as Alex had made it very clear, players will always go a direction you're not expecting. So having something like a resource like this that I didn't prepare for that. Oh, hey, there's a dungeon over there. Anybody that's played Skyrim knows that when a little icon appears, you can be dead on going a quest and, what is that? And get distracted. And this is a great filler for that. That not only makes it seem like you're always prepared, but also gives you material when you don't have anything ready to go. So I thought they were awesome and ingenious, and kudos to the team over at Inkwell, man. Mm-hmm. All right, that'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip, Dungeon Morph Cards from Inkwell Ideas. Our player tip of the podcast is,
don't be a dick.
Nice.
I'm getting better.
Do you want to tell them about Chain Heal, Ian?
Well, to start off, this is actually part of our first player tip in the wild, where you actually are not a dick.
Right.
There are a lot of many approaches to take when healing, but one unique combination works really well. The Chain Heal Combo.
Oh, yes. So, the Circle of Stars Druid gets access to Starry Form at second level. This allows the user to use their wild shape to take on a luminous and glimmering form. Upon choosing, you can pick a specific constellation form. One of those is called the Chalice. This allows the druid to heal themselves or another ally within 30 feet whenever they cast a spell using a spell slot that restores hit points.
Now, choosing a spell such as Healing Word that heals a target as a bonus action now heals two targets. We can further take it up a notch by picking the Metamagic Twin spell. You get this either by multiclassing or by taking the Metamagic Adept feat. Either way, now a single bonus action can heal up to three different targets. And now, go forth and heal. This is really an episode all about healing.
Yep, I'm on it. What do you guys think? I almost put an NPC that was a healer, and I was like, no, I don't want that.
Oh, no.
Actually, for the Princess of the Apocalypse campaign I ran, I actually created an NPC who was basically a walking heal button.
Nice.
But he was basically a multi-class between Life Domain Cleric and the Circle of Dreams Druid. So even just casting Goodberry
was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So anyways, let's talk about this awesome tip. Alex, what are your thoughts on triple healing with a bonus action?
I think it is really good. Something that I just like want to commend you on whenever you talk about the player tip of the week. I'm learning Magic the Gathering right now. And if there's one thing that I've learned is that finding combos is actually a lot harder than you think it is. Like whenever someone points out a combo, you're like, oh, that's obvious. Yeah, that's. And so like, I don't know if a lot of people would discover the combo of the meta magic feat, which would be a fun feat to have as a druid, combining with this like celestial thing. And so like, or the star, what is it called? The constellation thing. So I think that it is amazing that, you know, you've given people such a fun little nugget to take home and like, be like, ooh, what about this? What about this? And like, that's just what I imagine here.
It's funny. I appreciate the kind words. Cause Brandon, if I recall, says, this is why DM hate power gamers, Justin.
I love power gamers.
Yeah, I like to find those things. At least I do.
I know you do, and I love it.
But this is obviously, it was very thematic.
And then there's me.
Yeah, bastard. I played a shaman in Classic WoW, and Chain Heal was my jam. So, of course, you know, I love this combo. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to think of other ways you could even improve this, and I couldn't find any right off the bat, but I know there is. So
someone will find it.
Yeah, right. And if you know, share below. Yeah. Let me know. All right. That'll do it for our player tip of the podcast. Don't be a dick.
I missed it.
I tried to pause so that I would line up better for her, but then you paused too, which is good. But then nobody said anything because I was waiting. Welcome to the show, everyone.
This is the internet.
So, before we close out today, every week we love to give away fat loots. That's what we do on our show. All of us want to improve and grow our little hordes of loot. So, Alex, would you like to tell us about our RPG fat loot giveaway today?
I would love to. The Lost Temple of the New Thunder Tree by Purple Bog Press, which is just a fantastic name. Mission to check on construction at the New Thunder Tree and help with diplomacy quickly turns into an exciting adventure of dungeon delving as the entrance to an ancient temple is discovered. Can your party survive long enough to learn the mystical secrets of the Thunder Tree's past and claim its riches? The Lost Temple of the New Thunder Tree is for 5th through 7th level characters and an excellent follow-up to the Lost Mines of Pavlar.
Yes.
Or easily dropped into any Sword Coast Adventure campaign, honestly.
Yes, it's really good stuff.
And our winner for this week is RobMan1210.
If you didn't win, have no fear. Crit Academy is here. Head on over to CritAcademy.com and subscribe for your chance to win. If you don't know, when you subscribe to our newsletter, you also get a free copy of our very well best-selling product, the Challenge Accepted Skill Challenges for your 5th Edition Adventures. So definitely check that out. That's what we do, man. Like, we just make it rain on you guys. And all we ask is in return is your soul. I mean, your email address.
It's basically the same thing at this point.
Yeah. all right. One last thing. We released our Warlord, a new non-magical martial class.
Yeah.
It is awesome. I was a big fan of 4th edition. If you've listened to the show for any amount of time, you know that. And one of my favorite classes was the Warlord. It was a support style character. Some of the 5th edition mechanics on the fighter Battlemaster are part of that, right?
And this is what the Purple Dragon Knight tried to be.
Yeah, oh, it failed miserably too. So the Warlord basically uses powerful shouts that buff their allies, debuff their enemies, move players in initiative order, maneuver them around the field, can heal, can grant temporary hit points, can grant buffs to damage, all sorts of different things. And the key resource isn't spells, but is your own hit die.
Yep.
And because of that, it becomes very potent tool of self-sacrifice. There are mechanics that offset that, and there's other stuff. And there's a three, I think it comes with two different subclasses. So full-on class to tickle your dice.
Was that also the mechanic in 4E? Like the hit die? Yeah. Was that also the mechanic
in 4E? No, the shouts and the commands was, but there was no, okay. Everything was either encounters or at wills or dailies. Yep. So I had to find a way to balance those.
You had healing surges in fourth? Is that what it's called?
Okay, yeah. Healing surges. But that was something that does. So one of the shouts does let all the other players spend their hit dice to heal themselves right away. Which allows them to heal at a cost to themselves as opposed to some spell's resource. It turned out awesome. I couldn't have been happier. So
I'm pretty sure the Marine Chesty Polar was a warlord. Sir, we're completely surrounded. Excellent. Okay, we're in all directions.
So if this sounds interesting to you, please head on over to rebrand.ly/DND Warlord. I'm sure there's a link in the chat box as well. I do want to give a shout out before we close out here. We have put out a survey for the show podcast that you can help us improve. God, that image. We always are trying to improve the show. We want you to have the best listening experience, the best watching experience. And so we've put out a survey at rebrand.ly/crit survey. Take a few moments, fill it out. We can help improve us and deliver a product that's better and for you and for others. All participants will be entered to win a $25 DMs Guild gift certificate. So you can go buy things on DMs Guild, preferably our stuff. It would be great, but if you don't have to, I guess. Please do that. We're all about continuous improvement and we want our show to grow. So, and that's with your help. You have the power. Now, Alex, I'd be remiss if I didn't give you a chance to not only plug your content, but promote the hell out of Initiative and Intrigue, because she is my dungeon master. And I'm not just saying this to get Browning points, though that's always a bonus. Her style is absolutely wonderful. I enjoy every minute of being at that table. You slip in and out of personalities more than I slip in and out of socks. And it is smoother too. And I've only fallen once or twice a week. I applaud you and your DMing skills. So blow up the internet with your awesomeness right now.
Well, thank you so much. Hello, my name is Alex Baum. Misspell the course, because I am dyslexic. I have a show that runs every other Friday. We just had it this Friday, called Initiative and Intrigues. And Initiative and Intrigues is my baby. It is my child. It is set in the Wayward Arrow setting, which is my personal setting. And the number one thing that you really need to know about that setting is that there are no dragons. It's Dungeons and Dragons, but no dragons, because the dragons tried to take over and kill the gods. And so the gods were like, ha, you're funny, and then turn them into the thing that they hated most, mortals. And that is how we got the Dragonborn. And so just recently we got through the prologue of what I call the prologue of one of my campaigns, and we are now facing chapter one, where our players have discovered a live, active, speaking to them dragon egg, a silver dragon egg. However, the dragon egg is cursed. Before, you see, chromatic dragons didn't really like meeting with one another. And so what they would often do is they would find metallic dragons' eggs and curse them to create a chromatic dragon. So now our players are off on an adventure to try to find crystals of good, to hopefully come back to the dragon before she hatches so that they can feed her the crystals of good, so that they can release her from the curse. And thus, the dragons will be reborn. And then we will come into chapter two.
I'm excited. I want to.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on along the way. it's going to be. It's going to take like 2 weeks, and I'm like,
The players in that game are awesome too. There's so many great personalities. Please come and watch us. Lots of good talent, and it is just fun. please, please come join us. All right. Yeah. That'll do it for our show today. Had a few technical difficulties, but we made it. Yeah. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
And I am the guest host, Alex Baum.
Thanks for listening. Keep your blades sharp and spells prepared, heroes.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.